This is Politics is Local, a special election time series of KHOI Community Radio. This week's program features the second of four candidate forums presented by the League of Women Voters of Ames and Story County. This forum, held last Thursday, October 4th, brought together the candidates for the Story County Board of Supervisors, Republicans Martin Chitty and Scott Shaben, Democrats Lars Olson and Linda Merkin, and Independent Wayne Clinton. Candidates were asked the same questions, with some of the questions coming from the audience. The forum was moderated by Davita Harden for the League of Women Voters. Each candidate began by giving a three-minute statement. Wayne Clinton's was read by Davita Harden.
Thanks to the League of Women Voters for hosting the forum tonight. I deeply regret not being able to participate in person, as I am not feeling well enough to leave the House. I am Wayne Clinton, seeking re-election to my fifth four-year term to the Story County Board of Supervisors. My wife, Edna, and I have lived in Ames since 1966. We raised our family, made many friends, and have been a leader in our community. I served as a teacher and coach in the Ames Community School District for 34 years and was elected to serve as your county supervisor for the past 16 years. I have a proven track record of service, leadership, and results for the citizens of Story County. I have served in leadership roles on various boards and commissions at both the local, state, and national levels. With my experience and leadership, we have been able to fund revitalization to our small community, double funding of social services, implement a 30-year strategic plan, fund water quality initiatives, all while lowering taxes. Vote for me by filling in the oval next to my name on the ballot to keep our county moving forward. I want to continue to make Story County a better place for future generations who wish to raise a family here. You can visit my Facebook page, Citizens to Reelect Wayne Clinton, for further details. Mr. Shaben?
Thank you for having me here tonight. For those who haven't met me yet, my name is Scott Shaben. I'm a lifelong resident of the state of Iowa. I was born and raised in western Iowa. First job I ever had was pushing a broom at my uncle's warehouse. And the first promotion I ever got was to be able to clean the restrooms in that warehouse. Everything I've ever had, I've earned, and I've never been afraid to roll up my sleeves to work hard for what I've earned. I had a firm mom growing up. One of her favorite sayings was, when you turn 18 and graduate high school, I'm going to break your plate and burn your bed. My mom was tough, but she was also fair, and not one of us dared to test her on that. So when I graduated high school, I went to the United States Navy. I had no confidence in myself. I didn't think I was smart, but the Navy did. They sent me to advanced electronics school. I served our country for 6 years, and upon completion, I went to Iowa State University where I got my degree in marketing. After that, I went to Iowa State, got my degree in marketing, and I went to work. I spent the better part of the last decade in the automotive industry, and I worked my way up from sales to finance manager to sales manager, and I'm currently a finance manager at the Honda Nissan store here in Ames. When I became aware of this opening on the Board of Supervisors last winter, I was recruited by a couple of different leaders within the community. They told me, Scott, you'd be a great fit for this. They said, Scott, you've got common sense. You're able to talk to people on both sides of the aisle. You're able to talk to both employer and employee. So I threw my hat in the ring and I said I would do it. I'm passionate about Story County. I've been here now for almost two decades. The things that I like about the county are the things that make the county great is the fact that our budget is finally balanced. It took them a long time to do that. Things I want to build upon are accessibility. I want to be as accessible as possible to not only the residents, but also the employees of the county. And I also want to help build upon the transparency that our current board has. And I want to make things as easily accessible, information as easily accessible as possible. And one of the things would be making it as transparent as possible for people to see where the county spends money, whether it's a set of pens for the supervisor's office or a squad car for the sheriff's department. People should be able to easily access as much information about their government as possible. I hope you guys get the opportunity to know me a little bit more tonight. Thank you.
Morris.
Thank you, Davida. Having been up there myself at one point, it's always interesting to switch off roles. And full disclosure, I am a member of the League of Women Voters and actually second generation. So my mom was a leader and president of the local league. Okay, I'm Loris Olson. I'm an Iowa native. My husband, Kerry, is a physics professor at Iowa State University, and I live in Ames. We have no children. We do have two cats who own us. And if you visit my home, most of the time you will find either a foster animal. I'm not fostering right now during the election, but we take in for some of the local rescues and shelters dogs who are special needs or abused, and also litters of kittens because I love kittens. I'm the Democratic primary winner and the candidate for the four-year seat on the term that is expiring on your ballot. I have received endorsements and support from the party and several respected former elected officials. They have praised my dedication to promoting public involvement, accountability, and innovation in local government. I'm humbled by that support, and I believe that much of it comes from my former role as a journalist. I strived as a journalist to always listen to and represent all sides of an issue accurately and in context. I have 20 years experience plus covering local governments in three states on the city, county, and state level, and even had the opportunity at one point to cover a tribal government. Over a decade of that experience is right here in Story County. As a result, I believe that they believe that I am uniquely prepared and informed to join the Story County Board of Supervisors in its new configuration and as we move toward improvement and more progress. They believe, as do I also, that I will be able to represent voices and perspectives that have not been equally represented at the board table for several years. I look forward to the discussion and thank you all for coming out tonight.
Mr. Titi.
Evening. I would like to extend a thanks and a gratitude for the League of Women Voters providing a forum so we have the opportunity to get our positions out there. And I appreciate the advocacy of groups like yourself because I would find Story County to be well served by that. I'm Marty Chitty. I'm a lifelong resident of Story County, save for years spent in college. I live on the eastern side of the county on my folks' farm where I was born and raised. I am the grandson of a farmer. I'm the son of a farmer, but I just live on the farm because everybody's left. I am married. My wife and I are both products of Nevada High School. We have three children, and I would point out for just information, the oldest has graduated from Iowa. I hope nobody would hold that against me. That said, I have a junior in high school and a freshman in Nevada High School. I have led a rather pedestrian life. I went to college, became a funeral director. Rob Bacon and I attended the same mortuary school. He's a much funnier man than I, but we are good people deep down, I believe. I have a 24-year career at FedEx that paid me well to drive about Story County. I have a fluency moving about the county that I would say gives me the opportunity to see people in their lives and the businesses that have both succeeded and have grown and some that have come and left us. I have found that Story County's history is yet to be written. Our best days are yet to come. I'd like to think that I offer up a skill set that speaks to that. And by that, I mean I'm the 10-year serving board president of the Nevada School Board. I have led in Nevada on a scale that both adds content, programming, and facilities in a manner that I would be very comfortable with. I would encourage anybody, if you want to talk to what Marty Chitty is as a leader, go to Nevada, ask them what they think of me. I also had the great fortune and personal misfortune to have known Paul Toot because we grew up and graduated from Nevada together. So I spent the month of May saying goodbye to him. I was approached and asked to put in for this appointment. Everybody up here put in for that appointment. I was selected. I have made it my mission to learn and become a better supervisor with each day. I show up with a farm son's earnestness that I will do my very best on your behalf. I have shown work product that I think that you will see serve for many years to come in my short time on the board. I don't want to make this a short civics lesson that I go home and wish that I had the opportunity to continue with. I ask for your vote and your support this coming November. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Merkin? Thank you to the League for hosting this opportunity for us, the candidates, to hear from the voters. And thank you to all of you for taking the time to be here. My name is Linda Merkin, and I'm also running to fill the remainder of Paul Toot's term. When we introduce ourselves at these events, we usually give a summary of our work experiences and the skills gained through them. As I was preparing my remarks, I realized that's pretty much what my brochure does.
and I have more copies back there. If you haven't gotten one, so feel free to pick one up on the way out. What I decided I'd like to take the time tonight to tell you about is the people I've come into contact with over the years and what they've taught me. First, I've worked with government officials and public employees. I've worked with mayors and city council members, township trustees, legislators, and members of Congress and their staff. And for over three decades, I worked for a board that included 22 county supervisors. I learned a lot about local government and how it touches the lives of our citizens. I learned that elected officials, particularly county supervisors, need to be experts in many fields, and probably many, many fields. I've seen city and county officials scrape to find money and already tight budgets to help people in need. I've seen legislators work long hours to pass bills that truly help their constituents. And I've come to realize that the vast majority of public officials and employees are motivated by a desire to serve. I've also worked with police chiefs, county sheriffs, and local fire agency volunteers. I have incredible respect for the dedication of the people who keep us safe, whether they do it as employment or as volunteers. In Franklin Township, I've seen our volunteer firefighters and rescue personnel who have full-time jobs elsewhere give their time off to attend training to improve their knowledge and skills, to recruit other volunteers, and even to raise money to help fund the agency. They answer our calls for help whenever they're needed, even if it's in the middle of the night or during their child's birthday party. I've also worked with survivors of domestic abuse and sexual assault and the advocates who help them. I remember many years ago as I was working a three-hour evening shift in the shelter here, watching a woman who had just come into the shelter earlier that day make a meal for her young children, bathe them, put them in clean pajamas, and read a bedtime story to them in a short amount of time under what were obviously difficult conditions. If I ever find myself in a really tough spot, I want that woman or somebody very much like her to be at my side. But I also learned from volunteering the shelter that not all victims look as heroic as this woman did that evening, and we cannot judge people by how they present when they need our help most desperately. And I work with criminal justice personnel and human services providers who help people suffering from mental illness. And I've been door knocking in the county, I have stopped at many doors where when I talk about mental health funding being a priority, somebody will just look at me and say, oh, I have a sister, or I have a son who's mentally ill, or I am mentally ill. I continue to be reminded that mental illness is neither a weakness nor a character flaw, and that despite all the skilled and caring people who work providing services to those suffering from mental illness, the needs are not always being met. And now, with closure of two of Iowa's four mental health institutes and a failure to reinvest that money in our communities, Iowa's mental health system ranks 50th in the nation. That's right. We're at the very bottom. We have to do better. Thank you.
I'm Mary Richards from Ames. I would like each of you to comment on how well you think we are providing mental health services in this county. And given the limitations that the state has imposed, what do you see that you could do as a county board of supervisors that would improve our mental health services in this county?
Thank you, Mary. We're going to start with Loris.
Oh, all in 2 minutes. Okay. How well are we serving the mentally, the people with mental health and intellectual disabilities? Because that's also in the county right now. I think our region is doing well. I serve on an 8-county board that provides mental health and substance abuse services, community and family resources, and most of the rest of the board of supervisors need to tell you that. So when I say some of the supervisors, I'm not being too presumptive, okay? But some of the supervisors on the board, they actually are in a different region. So I get to compare services. And our region is well organized and seems to still be able to provide, in part because many of our counties in our region had healthy kind of mental health savings accounts, which we have turned over to the region. And so we are not taxing you right now, the maximum even by law we're allowed to tax. And I do want to point out that that maximum is less than what the region estimates they're spending on our citizens in mental health. So there's one gap right there. So what's going to happen after that money runs out is that we're going to look at the Board of Supervisors, who's ever sitting on it, is going to have to probably raise your taxes to go ahead and tax to the maximum allowed for mental health. Then we're going to have to come up with more money beyond that. Now, back to how they're being served in the region. The region actually is adding another $4 million worth of services this year, but we need a crisis center, somewhat of a 24-hour or less drop-in crisis center. We need better jail diversion programs. I'm going to now leave that because I know they have other ideas also, and I bet I'd support them. And what can we do as a Board of Supervisors? Well, the first thing is we hold a seat on that regional board, one of 10. We advocate, and I'll stop.
Thank you. Marty?
One of the things that is both humbling, irritating, and enlightening is you find out your limitations as a supervisor within the county. There are things and mandates that are constraining you in what you would do or what you would think should be done, not the least of which is what we do on the mental health side of things. We have entered into a 10-county region. We are the largest county. We have brought to the fore what we have done through our community life program. We have brought Optima in as a service provider into our county. They have done a commendable job. They, in turn, are looking to expand services, and the fact that they're having discussions in regards to putting in another 24-bed facility, but then again, they're going to do it on a profitability basis, so that's a conversation that will be had. In my short time on the board, you have seen a telepsych component being added to the jail because, as John Osman will tell you, at the jail, one in three inductees, I believe that was his term, will present with a overt or a subliminal psych condition that that turns into a potential warehousing of an inmate, which comes at a cost to the county. We have are moving to a telemed situation with Story County Hospital in Nevada such that, we can see inmates from the jail to the hospital without transport. We are certainly in a position where right now we are constrained in what we have been and to what we would like to do. We are in discussions as far as adding programming that is going to be done on, as we are in a 2080, we will have to do things with consent of our partners. On a numbers basis served, you were looking at, when we left the CLP program to where we are today, virtually the same numbers in the county. But this, the frustration I have is when you sit there and you start asking the questions and you dive down, and I think Linda spoke well to it when she sat there and says you don't, in 2 minutes you can't begin to tell what mental health is, because so much of what we have has been driven from the state and we are left by its structures and constraints, and it is frustrating having come from a program that CLP was to what we have today. I think there's still a right upside, but it will take efforts on behalf and our advocating for our residents here in Story County through our region to Des Moines, through our legislatures down there to bring things back to us.
Linda? I have no quarrel with what everybody said about the quality services they were getting right now. I would very much agree with that, and I have seen good things such as the telemed that have been added. I was at the beginning of this, looking at criminal justice clients with mental health problems when we started the jail diversion program, over 10 years ago now. And I'm glad that we have that, because when you look at criminal justice, you see a third or more of the people who are in jail and prison who suffer from mental illness, and that is not where people should be treated. So I would be very much in favor of continuing expanding the jail diversion program, for one, and also in-house services in the jail for people who aren't appropriate to be released during that time. But I am looking, again, forward at end of fiscal 19. I really doubt that there can be enough tweaking of the legislation that we're under right now, the reorganized mental health system, to solve all the problems that we're seeing. When I was working back in corrections and they were beginning to look at this system and talking about all of the options then, I was thinking, what other ways could there be of providing these services that would probably give a more stable funding base? At that point, I did think about, would a state agency with state funding be a good thing? If that were ever to be proposed, I will just tell you I would not be in favor of the Department of Human Services doing it, because this is harsh, but they've made a hash of whatever they've done in terms of mental health services. I was at that point thinking the Department of Public Health might be a good place for mental health services to be seated. The reason that I thought that, and I still think it's an option to think about, is that so many people who suffer from mental illness have co-occurring disorders, primarily substance abuse. When we were working with the jail diversion program and trying to get services put together for people with co-occurring disorders, it seemed like we jumped through hoops to try to get a mental health counselor and a substance abuse counselor in the treatment group at the same time, and that's what you needed for a quality co-occurring disorders program. You needed both those expertise, and my time is up, so I'll stop there.
Scott?
It was once said that the best solution to your problems comes from within. If you can't solve things by yourself, you reach out to your family. And if your family can't help you, you should reach out to your community, whether it be your church or your city. And if your community can't help you, then you reach out to your larger form, your state government, and the last resort would be your federal government. A few years ago, mental health was dealt with at the community level here at the county. 2 weekends ago, we had an entire forum dedicated specifically to mental health. And at that forum, I brought it up that what these new regions have created is a term called political cover. When you have elected officials that don't want to be held accountable, that want to take a political hot potato and pass it on down the line, the easy answer to do it is to move it up the line. And that's what's happened. Right now, unfortunately, if the police are called to help somebody with having a problem, there's three options. Send them to jail, send them to the hospital, or leave them alone. We as a county can fix that. We can work on our efficiencies. If the region isn't fulfilling the needs, or if the region is becoming a drain on the county, your board of supervisors can work to address that. As somebody who prides themselves in efficiencies and actually solving problems, I would never campaign on taxing you to the max. Getting the most money out of you isn't the answer. Figuring out where the problem is, figuring out where the inefficiency is, and solving that inefficiency. I come from Western Iowa. I come from Carroll. And in Carroll, we have a place there that deals specifically with people with intellectual disabilities. We recruit employers, or they recruit employers to help those people get jobs, to help them transition into the community. Carroll's a role model, not only for Western Iowa, but for the entire state, for how to deal with people with intellectual disabilities. And here in Story County, I'd love to see us mirror something like that.
Thank you. Next question, please.
I just came from a forum on campus which was dealing with water quality, specifically nutrient removal from runoff from agricultural land. What should be the role of the Board of Supervisors in dealing with this problem, which many define as one of the major ones that's facing our state today?
We will start with Marty.
I think that we would be well advised to take into account that which was to that which we find today. Improvement has been made on both a technology and an approach basis. I live on a farm. I have farmers as neighbors. I know what used to be. And I know what I find when I drive home. We are in a much better place. You have the farm and ag industry is very cognizant. This is a discussion item. You see ourselves in partnerships with the University of Iowa, the Farm Bureau, and sundry other agencies acknowledging the state that we find ourselves in, knowing that we have the ability to affect change in a positive manner, both on a small-scale individual farmer and on a grander scale. We are doing things on the county basis, as the fact is when we bring in to conversations with Mike Cox and his conservation board, and I would point to you as an example. People are always saying, well, what can you do? What can be done? Hickory Grove was a body that was built and brought into being in the mid to late 60s, and it wasn't until very recently that you had numerous and rolling series of fecal bacteria warnings that caused the public to be denied access to the water. Through the planning of the board, through the conservation board, they have subsequently been able to clean up that body of water through shore armoring, through the alleviating of the deficient septic systems around there, that they have moved it to this year as the swimming season is closed on us. They had one fecal warning, and that was after 3.5-inch rain versus multiple in years gone by. They had gone through a clarity of water. It had gone from 6 to 8 inches to, I believe, all the way down to 3 to 3.5 feet. Progress has been made. We will have to do it as both agencies in government, but we will do this on the private sector, too. This will not be a top-down approach, and I would like to think that we have it within ourselves to make a difference as we continue to make a difference. Thank you.
The first thing that I would do as a supervisor is I would vote no on any CAFO application that came in front of us. CAFOs have been a problem in terms of water quality. We don't have a huge number in Story County, but north of us, we do. And that's where our water comes from, our streams come from. I think there should be a moratorium on CAFOs. I know that that might not really change anything because the DNR has the final say, but I think that voting no on CAFO applications is a way to send a message. Secondly, in terms of development that's approved by the supervisors through the planning and development process, we need to make sure that water retention is in development plans. We need to make sure that we don't have the runoff that we have right now. You know, it's not a solution just to say, let's put a bigger drain pipe in. Let's get that water moving downstream. That's not a solution for our world. And it's not a solution for Story County because some of it is elsewhere in Story County then. I think the Conservation Department does a very good job. What Marty's talking about with Hickory Grove, I think there's a place that regulation really works, and I think we need to regulate what we can as county supervisors. The last thing is that I do not see the voluntary nutrient reduction strategy working in this state. They're not really collecting the data, and it's not going to work quickly enough. I think, and I am a small farmer, I manage a small family farm with my cousin who farms for us. He's managed to do a lot of things that are very innovative. He's done more cover crops. He keeps more nitrogen. He said he thinks we've got 220 bushels of corn to the acre this year because of using cover crops. And he's cut his inputs. He's cut his fertilizers. Okay. So, yeah. And we also have some land in CRP because we know that perennials keep the roots keep water on the soil. Our problem right now is we've got two crop rotations, corn and soybeans. We need a third crop in there desperately. Kim Weaver's done a good job of talking about that. But those things aren't going to happen fast enough voluntarily. I think we need regulations. I think they need to be sensible regulations. I think that the big ag, the large farms, need to pay for it themselves. I think we need to have some money to help small farmers put in some of those practices because some of them can be rather expensive.
Thank you. Scott?
We've heard some great ideas and so far, and they're all right. We have to use the technology that's in front of us. Things are different today than they were 20 years ago. The technology is different today when it comes to everything from crops to drainage than it was 100 years ago. So we have to use what's in front of us. But then we also have to use the programs that are there, whether they're federal programs or whether they're state programs. And we have to educate everybody that's contributing to the water supply. We have to work with them. A big part of this board, being a part of this board, is going to be a liaison to work with both the farmers and both private industry, anybody that's has to deal with runoff and would contribute to our water supply. Buffer, getting people to convert parts of their farm to buffer strips, supporting that type of stuff is kind of common sense. Advocating for a third crop, well, you're not going to legalize hemp at the county level. That's something that's not going to happen. I mean, you will have to work with your state legislators, but then you also have to say to yourself, who at the county level would be a good voice for me at the state level? I'd like to think that would be me. Also, Marty mentioned Hickory Grove. Thank you.
Yeah.
Marty mentioned Hickory Grove. One of the other ones we can talk about is Dakin's Lake, some of the cleanest water in the state. I spent a couple years living up in Okoboji. Keep Okoboji Blue was the motto. That's where I learned to scuba dive. One of the things I'd like to see implemented here in Story County is a scuba diving program. I think it'd be great if we took the things that we have available to us, clean water in Dakin's Lake. We have deep water at Ada Hayden. It's a little known fact that, yes, you could get every PADI, Professional Association of Divers International, you could get every scuba diving certification here in Story County. Those are the types of things, though, that we have to work on when advocating for clean water.
Thank you. Morris?
Okay. I support what the supervisors did when it came to Hickory Grove. I believe there were 8 properties involved. So that's on the minutia level, though. There are simple regulations that can be put into place. I was at a recent, workshop forum on water quality, and they talked about if you can ask or regulate that the farmers who are still raising cattle not let their cattle in the stream. Because they tend to contribute to the pollution while they're hanging out in the stream drinking. So that's something simple on the local level. I guess I want to talk about what we're already doing that I'd like to see expanding. And that is, I think it was 3 years ago, the county took the lead in creating a watershed management authority for the Squaw Creek watershed basin. And that was done with a grant. I believe it was a federal grant, but I may be wrong on that. It might have been a pass-through grant from the state, though. But what happened is now we contract with Prairie Rivers of Iowa, and they go out. They have an employee who goes out and makes that one-on-one contact with farmers, and the discussions are on cover crops. They are on what will be that third crop in the rotation that will help put nutrients back into the soil. There have been some very preliminary suggestions at a recent meeting about, do we want to work with the entities for starting a second one for a different creek? And that's one way where you involve education, you involve cooperation, and possibly even we're back to maybe a regulation close, like get the cattle and the horses out of the stream, okay? I would support certainly some of Linda's motions about saying no to CAFOs, and I support overall the concept of a moratorium, but I'm concerned that we're going to end up trading a moratorium for a loss of what little control we have in scoring the matrix. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I would like to talk about transportation. Now when we have farmers farming multiple sections, what is your plan for using the limited money that we have available for the transportation system to maintain the transportation system, and how would you prioritize that?
This time with Marty.
You missed a wonderful presentation by your secondary roads director today, Darren Moon. I wish everybody would have the opportunity not to listen to what I got to say or anybody up here to say. You missed a good one. I would encourage you to go to the website, listen to what he had to say. We are in a position here just recently because of the increase of the gas tax to raise the contribution from the county level to his department by almost 25%. I'm rounding off. But he has the ability to replace the small bridges and what they're really known as box bridges. They're culverts, and those are things that date back upwards of 100 years. We talk about our antiquated tile system. You got to talk about our antiquated bridge system. We have a planning document that is before the board that we know that there are places and projects that are something that we seek to do. We take input from the conditions as we find them through the department and their inspections, because we will be bringing in the DOT to do our bridge inspections here earlier rather than later this year, because they find that weather is an impediment and they don't give us real input in real time to make our decisions. We have projects that we would like to see done in a timely fashion, but we know that there are things that we are limited on by the dollars and the weather, and we are left in a position where we contract with outside agencies that once their schedule is off, our schedule is off. We are making improvement. I can tell you, as being the only person up here that has a dirty car to go home in tonight, because I live on a county road, the minimum I drive on is 5.5 miles of gravel. Anybody wants to talk about safety of roads and bridges, talk to somebody who lives out in the county. That's me. I have seen improvement on a local level in recent years because we have moved to a lease agreement on our road graders. We are buying better quality rock. We are replacing our bridges. We are doing it in a way that we can both afford and do on a need basis. The targets move. And I realize that everybody would like to have what they have that is before them done, but we have to make choices, and sometimes the choices aren't always as well received. Economic development will be a driver in regards to what we do on a paving basis, but I encourage the board, as I have been here and will serve in the future, to seek out with other communities and municipalities that the needs will present themselves in a way for growth to happen within the county. And one of the things I would like the people to be cognizant of, while the borders of Story County will not shrink north, south, east, to west,
Story County's influence will. You're seeing a voluntary annexation going through on the east side of Ames that will move the Ames City Services onto that. You're seeing a voluntary annexation into the Slater area, both in Story County and into Boone County. You're seeing a voluntary annexation in the Nevada area. Story County government is footprint is shrinking. The municipalities are growing. They, in turn, will take on the responsibilities of more and more of the roads and bridges in our county. Thank you.
Thank you. If you note, I did kind of, I went out of order. My apologies. Nope. Linda should have went first. Linda.
No offense taken.
So, Francis, your question is, what additional funding might there be? And I think what you're also asking there is there a willingness to, to levy additional funds, perhaps, if we don't get the roads repaired in the priorities we should. And this probably is a triage thing. Myers talked about, and he gave a good explanation of what's going on now, what we can do with the money that's there. You know, if the county engineer comes to us and says, we have issues here that are threatening, safety, we're going to have to look at, can we find something in general fund? Would we have to look at an increase in rural levy? Would we have to look at TIF dollars? I would rely on the county engineer. He does a very good job of saying, looking at the bridges and looking at the roads and understanding the safety issues. But if it were a point where it was, we need more money for the roads, I would be willing to consider looking at the options.
Okay. Scott?
I'm going to echo Marty's. It's going to be hard to follow Marty. I was at the same presentation this morning that Marty was at, and it was a fascinating presentation, to say the least. Story County has done a good job of speeding up the pace of repairing our roads and bridges. It used to be 2 to 3 bridges per year, and now we're up to 10 to 12 bridges per year. In a county with 280 bridges, you can do the math. Like Marty said, we got a lesson today in what's a bridge. According to the state of Iowa, it's 20 feet. According to Story County, it's 16 feet. We have these nice box culverts. How to pay for it? Efficiencies in government again. Backtracking a bit, trusting the people that we have there. We have some of the best employees I've seen. Our county employees, I don't doubt their skill set at all, especially when it comes to the county engineer. So for people to question their judgment is kind of silly. Working within the department and figuring out what the priorities are, what bridges need to be replaced first, is the first step in saving money. And then secondly, I was fascinated today by the idea of, instead of having a dual box culvert, which came from the foundry together, putting two single box culverts together and fastening them together permanently, so that way you get the same net effect. However, you're not having to have a pricier crane and pricier equipment to put those items into place. It's things like that where efficiency comes into play to help save money, and you don't have to go to your first option being a tax.
Thank you.
I heard the question about priority, and I think we're two levels of priority. The first one is the one that the supervisors have to make on an individual bridge or road basis as the bridge starts to show the signs of we don't want anybody crossing over it or we need a load limit on it. And, in fact, there's going to be an audit in November. We learned that today, every 2 years the bridge comes. People come in and they inspect them, and then we'll get more bridges on the list, all right? So for the individual bridge or the individual road, safety is the number one concern. It has to be, okay? Then you take a look at traffic counts and usage. And we have roads and some bridges in this county, especially around the Ames area, that the traffic counts are going up dramatically, especially in the north part, north of Ames. For example, Dayton Road, North Dayton Road, was never built to handle 1,000 cars a day, but that's what it's getting. And it would be, at some point, needs to be dealt with. It'll be very expensive. It's got deep, steep ditches. There's no curb and gutter. We're lucky we haven't had accidents before. Then to take a look at agricultural use and then cost. And that's where I think Scott got into a little bit, talking about now using box culverts instead of building. The difference can be a third to a half less, given on what the presentation we had today, to use box culverts and then pave over those for some of the smaller bridges. But you always have to pay attention to load. the equipment's bigger and it's heavier, okay? And there are times when they've got to go ahead and they've got to get to market there. I don't believe that TIF money is necessarily the answer for us, and that has to do with TIF has to be tied to economic development. And while we have paved, an implement dealer, a portion of a road near an implement dealer, I do not believe that it qualifies that way overall to just go out and fix a bridge in the middle of the county. And I had other ideas, but you can grab my brochure and go on my website.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much.
Hi, I'm Carol Williams. I live here in Ames. A couple weeks ago, Rick Sanders and Mike Cox gave a great presentation to the Board of City Council about the Trails and Greenways plan that is in the C2C plan that the county approved. My question is, do you support the Trails and Greenways plan, and how would you fund it?
We will start with Laura's this time.
Okay, Carol, get out of here. Have we trapped you? Okay. I support the connection of trails and the creation of the Greenway. Okay, so from that standpoint, I support that. The connection of the trails, doing a partnership with the city and other cities, and we've already paid for, so I do support it. How do you fund it is the question. And I am on a statewide study of the League of Women Voters related to tax incremental financing. And we're looking at all of the different ways that tax incremental financing has been used through the state. And I know that there has been some discussion among the previous Board of Supervisors about using some of that wind turbine money also for tax incremental financing, because as you really the wind turbines give tax dollars every year without us having had to borrow to do any infrastructure on them. So they are kind of a free will offering, if you will, as opposed to most tax incremental financing. But I want to see each project individually. The ISU Research Park project is one that I have pledged to support despite my concerns about the process that was handled with it, how long it was planned before there was any real knowledge that the public should probably come forward and provide public input. I'm not sure tax incremental financing is necessarily the way to pay for all public recreational space, because it does not give back any type of return on that. Normally tax incremental financing says, okay, if we borrow or invest money up front, we're going to get a better return down the road. And at the ISU Research Park, we're putting in 33 acres along with trails. And the buy-in or the expectation comes from an increased workforce down the road. So I'm done. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Marty? I'm glad you spoke to the C2C. That was my very first vote of substance on the board. I applaud it as it came out of the ground. Leanne Harder, as our planning director, has done a masterful job. Not only was she rewarded with an award last week, the C2C plan was as well. You're well served. It is a plan that is a living document that will serve this county well, because it involved all the stakeholders within the county, the organizations, and everybody's input was both valued, collated, and is attributed in a way that you can both support and be pleased with what will probably come forward on an evolving basis. Not the least of which you're going to see on a trail system as part of the county development, in which you're going to see the private development as they are putting in new housing projects. One of the things that they are looking to do and speaking to do is the fact that they want to know if there's a possibility on connections. I point to the south of the new gosh, I can't even think of it right now. Okay, let's go back to this one. I'll come back to that one. I had the opportunity to work to make the final east connection on the Prairie Trail on the north side of the county. As fate would have it, one of the stakeholders was a neighbor that I grew up with. He happens to be an agronomist at the Key Co-op. He has the ability to do part of the negotiations with another stakeholder in the city of Ziering, and we are nearing completion. I had the opportunity to work with the superintendent of the Colonesco School District, which also bought into it, so that we could have the northeast portion portion of the Prairie Trail be connected to Dakin's Lake that would give that amenity a finished approach. And I'm still at a loss. I can't remember what I was thinking. That said, I anecdotally, when you go over to the city of Nevada, one of the things that I was asked to do on the school board was to give my blessings to reach out to private landowners to contribute ground easements to expand our bike trail and system. And I thought, nah, that's not going to be the case. You can't but go and see, you know, at any time of the day, because you see people with their lights on, with their dogs. You see one on their bikes. I tell you what, I stand chastened and I stand corrected for the fact that that is an amenity that people seek, and they would move and join us for if they had that opportunity made available to them. I encourage not only our municipalities, our counties, and any other private entity that can place those in amongst us.
Linda.
Carol, I think your question was related specifically to funding. I don't think there's any doubt that this is a very good project, but where will the money come from? TIF is probably a logical place to look on that, and I would be the first to say I need to learn more about TIF. I've heard various people talk about it. Some people, it's the best thing since sliced bread, if that's a phrase you relate to. My mother used to say it all the time, and some people seem to think it's, you know, the devil's spawn. I have a sense that the truth is in the middle on that. I understand that Story County has been very low in its rate of using TIF funds, and that's something to look at. I would have concerns down the road, and that's one of the questions I have is, let's see what the payback schedule is. Let's see how that works. And one thing I have really not had a chance to look into, but somebody said to me, and I think I want to learn more about this, is that in the terms of the school funding, the legislature is currently backfilling, you know, what normally would go to the schools in terms of that property tax increase. I'd like to know more about the politics of that. Is that something the legislature is going to, you know, likely to continue to do? I heard there was a bill recently that somebody wanted to discontinue that. I don't know that it had much support. I can see Rick saying no, it didn't. But that's one you kind of got to, you know, keep your eye on. Is where does TIF go in the long run? You know, where is it going to, you know, where might it cause unintended consequences? And I'm always one to look for the unintended consequence of anything because, unfortunately, they show up too often. So, good question. I don't really have the answer, but those are the things I would look at in trying to determine the answer.
Thank you. Scott.
The cornerstone to Capstone is a great plan. It works hand in hand with both the urban fringe and the future of the county. As Ames grows, so will the county, but as it will also grow into our other communities. As for the bike trails and the other trails as part of the Cornerstone to Capstone program, I don't know if it'd be considered unintended consequences or just consequences in general, but backtrack a bit, we're talking water quality. Here you've got land that's green, perfect way to filter water. That's one consequence of having these nice trails. Another one is economic development. What a better way to recruit a business to our community or anybody to our community than by saying, hey, look at our nice trail system. If you want to go to any other trail system, if we can get ourselves connected, that's a great thing. What happens with when our economy grows? Housing prices go up, more revenue, then we can fund some of the other programs that got mentioned tonight, probably about a half dozen or more so far. To backtrack, though, are the trails a good thing? Is the cornerstone to Capstone a good thing? Absolutely. How can it be funded? Through easements, through smart purchases, through public-private partnerships.
Thank you.
My name is Derek. I'm from here in Ames. We've talked about outdoor recreation and water quality. One available funding source that could be available to our county is the funding of the Natural Resource and Outdoor Recreation Fund, the amendment voted by the citizens of Iowa. There is a push to increase the statewide tax to get this money available to the counties and other organizations in our state to improve our natural resources and our outdoor recreation opportunities. Do you support this tax increase, and what can you do in your position as a county supervisor to get this passed and get this money made available the way the people of Iowa wanted it to be?
Starting with Marty.
I would say that we have a proposal coming out of ISAC that would take that into account and actually move it to a full penny on the sales tax as we do with the save dollars. Linda asked a good question. The state backfills 90% on TIF to school districts. The school district is out to 10%. I would propose and have comfort with that. I say that as a fiscally conservative Republican. I've already advocated it with both Rob Bacon and David Dio that I would like to see that
be put forth in this upcoming legislature. I think the citizens of the state spoke to that. I believe that would be something supportable going forward. As 3/8 of a cent, you leave monies on the table. You could possibly be working towards a mental health component. You could be leaving monies on the table for property tax reduction. I think I trust my legislatures just slightly enough that I give them the leeway after the 3/8 of a cent. And I've already advocated in that behalf.
Linda. In 2010, when the constitutional amendment was passed, I supported it, as did several other people, but we also had the concern of, because it would only be funded if the legislature would approve a sales tax. And would that happen? And because we had the constitutional amendment, would everybody think we had solved the problem? And unfortunately, I think that's what's happened. I would support the 1 cent. If sales tax is regressive, that's some of the concern, but I would support it. I think the outcome will really depend on whether that will happen will depend on the outcome of this election. I heard from the legislature last year on anything, well, we'll pass a gas tax. It's going to be very long before there's another tax increase in this state. And the good thing, though, about that sales tax is it would also bring some more money into the mental health system. I would want to know that the money that came into the mental health system that way would offset any property tax relief that came through that proposal. So, yes, I'm supportive, but there are reservations and concerns as to whether it will happen and whether it's the best way.
Thank you. Scott.
I don't think it's a matter of if it's going to happen. It's just a matter of when it's going to happen. The state taking the initiative and putting in place how that money should already be allocated, I think is a smart thing. I think it's good for the green spaces. I think it's good for nature and for the Department of our County Conservation. I'm drawing a brain fart right now, but no, I'm agreeing with you. I think it is going to happen. Oh, there we go. Now I know what I was going to say. To answer your question though about how do you raise awareness of it, it's education. It's groups like this, whether it's the League of Women Voters, whether it's your local Story County Republicans, Story County Democrats, your campus groups. It's going to take education on all, from every direction. You're not going to – the amount of money to spend to educate people, I think, will be minimal. But it's going to be a marketing campaign is what it's going to really boil down to. You know, they said, how do you sell the gas tax when the gas tax got passed? Well, it took educating, whether it was having your legislators go on to the talk radio shows or to talking to the newspapers and talking to all your different civic groups saying, hey, look, this is what it is. The gas tax was when it comes to the road use fund, the motor vehicle use road use fund, the gas tax was the last thing to be increased. Right before that was vehicle registrations, and right behind it will be your motor vehicle use tax. That'll be the next thing. But, yeah, to answer your question, I don't think it's just a matter of if it'll happen. I think it's just a matter of when, and it's going to be educating people and letting them know that, hey, we're not just haphazardly raising sales tax to fund whatever, there's an actual, the money's already allocated. So that's a good thing.
Thank you. Loris?
Thanks for the question. And the answers going before have left me with several responses. The answer is yes, I do support it. I share Linda's concern about any sales tax as a regressive sales tax for low-income people. Okay? Next. Because it has to be a penny based, I mean, you can't be taxing people at 3/8 of a percent easily without small business owners, and unless they've got QuickBooks, start doing the math, okay? I'm a little concerned about the devil in the details with the remainder of the money. And I'm going to go back to what Linda talked about with tax incremental financing that the legislature backfilling, in other words, giving state money to help the schools with the money that's being taken away by taking tax incremental financing money, all right? in our study, we've discovered that one of the reasons that some Republican legislators are voting for lower allowable growth, which means how much more the districts can spend every year per pupil, turns out because they're counting that backfill money as part of what they're spending on the school's total. Okay? So I want to make sure there's no accounting problems behind the scenes that end up where money doesn't go. Addressing the situation with the gas tax, I was very much in favor of the gas tax because of our local roads and bridges, and we've got to move forward in helping to pay for those. But of course, the finishing of Highway 20 wasn't on most people's mind, and that's where a big chunk of money went. So, as far as educating the people, I echo the various suggestions that have already come here with the service groups, but also the county has a special projects and outreach coordinator, I think is her name right now, and we can certainly help with some money toward there and her efforts. She's getting into video, she's getting into a new generation. Certainly the other types of groups are the local biking groups, as I smile and wave at Carol back there, okay, who also can spread the word. There's the new nonprofit foundation type called the Outdoor Alliance through Story County Conservation. So I think we can do the education on it.
Thank you. Thank you, candidates, for a very informative evening.
That's all we have time for on Politics is Local on KHOI Community Radio. This program featured the forum held last Thursday, October 4th. The candidates for the Story County Board of Supervisors include Republicans Martin Chitty and Scott Shaben, Democrats Loris Olson and Linda Merkin, and Independent Wayne Clinton. The forum was moderated by Davita Hardin for the League of Women Voters. Thanks for listening to Politics is Local.